Today we are going to discuss the quantization, well, first the formulation and the quantization of non-abelian gauge theories. Before that, oh my God, I wanted to make two remarks about what I explained last Friday about quantization of fermions, where we're discussing just the quantization of the free Dirac field for simplicity. We are going to couple the Dirac field to the gauge field later on this week. So two remarks. I said two things that were wrong. One, I did it on purpose, so. And one, it was just a reply to a question where someone asked me why you cannot represent Grassmann variables or Grassmann generators as matrices. And I said, that's because there is some big theorem. In fact, the argument was not but correct, but the reason is very simple. Imagine that you have just two theta and theta bars that anti-commute, and you want to represent them as matrices. So you want to represent them as some matrices, let us say, M, and some matrices M dagger. See, it's complex Grassmann variables that are matrices. Okay. Then you expect to have something like the expectation value of this object is, you want these matrices to obey, of course, M times M dagger equal minus M dagger M. See, it's theta, theta bar, equal minus theta bar, theta, something like that. And that's, of course, not possible for the simple reason. That's because if you take this, you can write the trace of M, M dagger equal minus trace of M dagger M, which implies that this trace is zero because of the cyclicity of the trace. And therefore, since M equals zero, which is compatible. So that's just this kind of argument. OK. The second point was that I'm sorry, I don't have my lecture notes here. So I explain about fermions that you can basically write a fermionic path integral like d of c bar d of psi, and then an exponential of the Dirac action, which is I over h bar integral d4x. And there is just an action that is I psi bar d slash psi minus m psi bar psi, which is perfectly correct. You can compute with that. But I said basically, well, this is d psi bar d psi psi. So these are generators, generators of the Grassmann algebra. And with this notation, the psi dagger, the psi bar is, you may say this is just the Grassmann conjugate of psi. In the same way that here we had, in fact, that's something that we call psi dagger. No, this was psi bar. Yes, no, this was psi bar. So this psi bar looks like the Grassmann conjugate of psi. That's not completely true because of some subtle point that I'm not going to explain, but it doesn't matter when you compute the propagator. So that's okay for the propagator. Computing propagators. So as long as Feynman rules are concerned, that's fine, but if you work a bit more, but in fact, if you work out the quantization of fermions using this path integral formulation, the exact relation is that, that the Grassmann conjugate, let us say, the conjugate of psi, which represent the operator psi dagger in the conjugate representation in the Fock space, acting acting on the Fock space. In the same way that psi represent the operator, the field operator psi in Fock space, this conjugate is in fact psi bar, the psi bar that is here times the first gamma matrices. That's the small subtleties. So it's not important for what we are going to do in the remaining of the course, where we are computing propagators of fermions and Feynman diagrams, but that's a subtlety, and there are some explanation, I think, in my lecture notes. Okay. So now, that's all about what I want to say about fermions. It was very short, but now let us introduce non-abelian
gate theories.
Okay. And I don't know if you have already discussed that in QFT1. No, you have discussed abelian gate theories, QED, but you have not discussed non-abelian gate theories that are a natural generalization of gate theory, which was but they were first introduced as a name of Young and Mills. Young and Mills introduced them around the 1954, I think, as a generalization of QED for trying to describe the nuclear force inside the nuclei. And it turned out that it was a wrong description. They were using the SU2 symmetry of isospin, I think, coming from isospin, which is an approximate symmetry between neutron and between neutron and proton in the nuclei, something like that. And it turns out that it was a wrong physical idea, but for the physics of strong interaction inside the nuclei. But it was a very, very good idea, both mathematically and for physics, because it turns out that those non-abelian gate theory were one of the basic tools to construct the standard model. So as you know, as you will see in the course model, the standard model, in fact, its basic ingredients are three things. First, non-abelian gate series, which are based, in fact, on a different group. It's a U1 cross SU2 group of the electroweak interaction and the SU3 group of strong interaction. They are based on the complex of the concept of chiral fermions, namely some particular properties of fermions with a fixed helicity and which are massless. And they are based on something important related to existence of gauge theories, not necessarily abelian, which is the X mechanism. And chiral fermions are related to the concept of anomalies that I started to discuss on a simple. So, okay, so why do we have to treat non-abelian gauge theories? I assume that in what I'm going to do, you are already familiar with group theory, Lie group theory, and Lie algebras. So I am going basically to discuss to construct the theory, the SU2 case, because that's the simplest. There are only three generators. But if you have any question about the math, just complain and say, no, haven't seen that. Okay. So non-abelian gauge theories. We need gauge theories if you want to construct a quantum theory involving vector particles. Namely, particles with spin 1. not spin zero like the boson, like spin one half like the Dirac fermions or Weyl fermions, but spin one particles like the photon. And in addition, we need non-abelian case series if we want that these vector particles are the, well, they are vectors because they behave like a vector in four-dimensional space, but also because they are the vectors of the interaction between currents, between particles. So the photon is a vector, is a mediator, if you want, the mediator or the vector of a current, the U1 current associated to QED, the current associated to electron and positron. Okay? And in, well, in the standard model, in high energy physics, in fact, there are, one needs to introduce to describe, for instance, the weak interaction, charge current. With associated to other symmetries. Okay. So that's generalization of the U1 current to non-abelian symmetries. Okay. So let me first discuss non-abelian symmetries at the level of global symmetry. So namely, not yet introducing some gauge field, but I just want to remind you that I want to take a scalar spin zero field describing bosons, but with a charge associated to the SU2 group. So I will have a scalar field phi, but it lives in the fundamental representation. What does it mean? It means that phi has two components, phi 1 and phi 2. So there are two different fields, two different kinds of particles, if you want. And each phi 1 and phi 2 are complex fields. So they already carry, some U1 charge because there is a U1 symmetry. Okay, but in addition, there is a SU2 group, which means that if I consider G, let us say, a unitary matrix, 1, 2, 3, 4, with G equal G dagger, an element of SU2, the fundamental representation, so that I represent an element of SU2 as acting on two-dimensional complex vector, which means that I'm using, in fact, the fundamental representation of SU2. Of course, I want that the interaction, all my physics, is invariant if I change phi of x. Of course, my field lives in Minkowski space, 1d minus 1, or in RD, if I'm using the Euclidean version of the theory. So I want that if I change this by G phi of x, so that's a global transformation. G doesn't depend on point in space-time. The physics doesn't change, which means that there is a bigger symmetry than just 2SU2, 2U1, okay? And of course, this is the general element of SU2, and any G can be represented as exponential, locally at least as exponential of I alpha, some matrix alpha, namely 1 plus I times alpha plus higher order terms if alpha is small. And alpha is a traceless permission matrix. So alpha equal alpha dagger, and trace of alpha equal 0. OK, so yes?
So I just want to check. Is this true for every spin 0 2 in the fundamental representation of the SE2 group? Or is it just true for like a two component?
Pardon?
Sorry, like what are you saying that this is true for? Is this for like any spin 0 2?
This?
Sorry, no, like the phi you're talking about is a spin zero field that's sitting in the fundamental representation of the
yes.
SE2 group, just not just any spin zero field.
Well, you may take a field that belongs to a larger representation. Larger representation of SU2. So in that case, it will have more component. And the transformation law will not be this form. But in general, so let us, that's a good point. In a general representation. But we are going to discuss very, very quickly another representation, which is the adjoint representation. In the general representation, element G belonging to the group G equals SU2 is represented by a matrix R of G acting on some vector space V dimension. D. Well, that's not the same D than here. And so the action phi will be a phi 1 up to phi D. And the representation will be that phi is transformed into R of G acting on phi. Okay, so now. So what is the most general action? Let's go back to this point. What is the most general action? Normalizable action. Action which is invariant under this SU2 global invariance. Well, that's easy. This is simply integral d4x, 1/2 of d mu phi. Well, let me write this phi bar at d mu phi plus m squared over 2 phi bar phi plus g over 2 phi bar phi squared. Where phi bar phi means simply sum from I equal 1 to 2 of phi bar of I, phi I. So this is phi 1, phi bar 1, phi 1, plus phi bar 2, phi 2, where phi bar is a complex conjugate of phi. So remember, phi is a complex field, so it has a real part and an imaginary part in phi bar. Okay, so and the same for the derivative, partial derivative. Okay. And so it's just the generalization of the phi 4 action, where I take the only SU2 invariant I can build in a simple way out of in the fundamental representation, which is just the scalar products, well, the Hermitian products of phi with itself considered as a vector in a two-dimensional Hilbert space. Okay. And what is the current associated to this, the neuter current? Well, a simple calculation shows that, in fact, okay. SU2 has three generators, remember. SU2 has three generators. The dimension of SU2 is three. Okay? So that means that the Lie algebra is made out of three. And the generators can be written as, for instance, the generators, the basis of the Lie algebra are the TAs equal one half of the sigma A, A equal 1, 2, 3, where the sigma A are just taken to be the Pauli matrices that you find in any textbooks. Okay? So this means that, well, that's just a good normalization, and the fact that, for instance, that any element of SU2, which is any element of the Lie algebra, so alpha belongs to the Lie algebra of SU2, which is often written little s, little u of 2, is a linear combination of the three Pauli matrices, which are traceless and Hermitian. Okay. So, there are three generators, which means that you have, in fact, three different kinds of generators for the symmetry. The one that corresponds to make an U1 rotation on one component, the one that corresponds to make a U1 rotation on the second, and the third one that mixes the one, as usual. And in fact, so there are three currents. Let us say G mu 1, G mu 2, and G mu 3. And this, so this G mu A, if I associate to each generator TA a current which corresponds to the symmetry when I make a transformation generated by this TA, this is, well, a simple calculation. So this is I over 2, phi bar times TA times phi, I'm sorry, times d mu phi minus d mu phi bar times TA times phi. Okay, remember, this is a vector, this is a matrix, two-component vector, a two-by-two matrix, and this is, I take then, the contract with the transpose of phi bar, so this is a number. Okay? So we have three currents, and remember, that's simply the same form as the current for the electromagnetism, except that I replace just the unique direction by the direction in which I perform a U1 transformation. Okay? And this is, each component is a number. So this is a vector, covector, with respect to the space-time. But better to deal with the matrix, with a 2x2 matrix. I call it G mu, which is just the sum over A of the G mu A TA. Okay? So this is a 2x2 Hermitian matrix. And if you want to be sure of what we are doing, this is a matrix that is also for one form, imaginary part of d mu phi bar 1 phi 1 minus d mu phi bar 2 phi 2. Here I have I phi bar 2 d mu phi 1 minus d mu phi 1. Phi bar 2, I'm sorry, phi 1. Well, here I have the complex conjugate, and here I have the same thing by replacing phi 2 and phi 1, so I get minus this term. So it's a traceless Hermitian matrix, which contains the three currents in just a block. So that's a convenient way to do calculation by dealing with the three currents at the same time. And also, it's a good way to deal with that, because if I make a change of basis in my generator of my group, or if I make a change of basis in my Lie algebra, this transforms according to this change of algebra. Okay, so this was for bosons, so spin zero, charged particles. And if you want to deal with fermions, so Dirac fermions.
François?
Yes?
Sorry, I'm not clear on the elements of the matrix you wrote down.
You are?
I'm not clear on the elements of the matrix.
I'm sorry, this is d mu phi bar 1 times phi 1 minus d mu phi bar 2 phi 2. And you take the imaginary part of this, which has to be a real number. Here I have I times phi bar 2 times d mu of phi 1 minus, sorry, d mu of phi bar 2 times phi 1. Here I take minus the complex conjugate of this. So I get I times this one by this one. But that's, in fact, you can check that this is an imaginary number. So that's, if you want to, if phi, so I get I phi bar 1 d mu of phi 2 minus d mu of phi bar 1 times phi 2. And here I get minus this term where I invert the 1 and the 2. Okay. So now, for Dirac fermions, it's the same. Now I have a two-component field, Dirac field psi called psi 1, psi 2, two-component Dirac fermions. The Dirac fermions have already a charge. They're complex. So. Okay? And I consider that psi bar now is, of course, the vector psi bar 1, psi bar 2. And I take as a Dirac action integral d4x psi bar I d slash minus m psi. So that's just the same Dirac action with the same mass for each of the components. Yes?
So like, psi 1 and psi 2 are both
spinors. Yes, they are spinors. Spinors Dirac field. That's the usual Dirac field. Simply, I have two copies of my Dirac fields. And the action is just the two fermions do not interact. They cannot interact without. You cannot build a renormalizable theory of fermions that interacts without gauge field. The Fermi theory that represents the point like interaction of two. Current is not renormalizable, for instance. So this is just two copies. And this means simply d dx times psi bar 1 I d slash minus m psi 1 plus psi bar 2 I d slash minus m psi 2. So my two fermions live together, live parallel, if you want. They don't. And the current are g mu a equal psi bar gamma mu times TA times pi. And if you prefer, that's a scalar product. Because remember, now psi contains two indices, so each the component of psi are some, if you want, it's a collection of psi A, I'm sorry, of psi I. Oh, and that's a bit of a bad terminology, because so let me call alpha here, where I goes to 1 to 2 are the group indices. And alpha equal 1 to 4 are the Dirac indices. So this means that I am applying I'm multiplying this vector considered as vector in alpha by a gamma matrix, and this vector considered as a vector in the representation of SU2 by the 2 by 2 matrix TA. Okay. So I have three indices, the indices of the group representation, the Dirac indices, and the index A, 1, 2, 3, which is the Lie group. That's a group representation, if you want. Representation. And the index alpha that are associated to the Lie group algebra. Okay? Okay, so now okay, so for the moment, there is no special interaction beyond the interaction, the contact interaction, which is between the bosons driven by the 5-4 interactions. There are no interactions between the fermions. So now the question is, how can we introduce interaction between these currents, the G mu A? Okay? Well, we do as in electrodynamics. We introduce vector fields, spin one, that mediates the interaction between the three currents. There are three currents. So we need three vector fields. So three is the dimension of the group. So in general, for a more general group, you will need more vector fields. For SU3, you will need, in the strong interaction, you need 8 different gauge fields because there are 8 generators for SU3. Okay? So we are going to introduce the vector potential, the vector potential field, A mu, but A of them. Okay? And again, this is a, so mu now, remember here mu, which is not here, but mu will be the Lorentz indices. Okay? So mu goes from 1 to 4, or in general, 2 to the power of the integral part of the dimension divided by 2 in d-dimensional space-time. Okay? And so this is a vector or a covector with respect to the Minkowski of space-time. And this is, and you have three vectors. And again, since we expect that the SU2 symmetry will act in a way, better to act this to group this theory in what is called a multiplet, exactly in the same way, A mu, which is this multiplet A mu is just a set of MU2 and MU3. So this is a vector in the E algebra SU2 for the three components, and therefore better to write it as a matrix A mu equals sums over A of A mu A times TA. And this vector field, of course, will depend on X, on the space-time point. And this is, again, a 2-by-2 matrix, a 2-by-2 Hermitian SS matrix. Okay. And in particular, if you want to write this, this is 1/2 of A mu 3, A mu 1 minus A mu 2, A mu 1 plus I mu 2, and minus A mu 3. Okay? So this vector potential, of course, will be real as a electromagnetic vector potential. So the phis are complex, the psi are Dirac spinors, so they have complex components, but the mu are real vector field. Okay? And again, in fact, as in QED or classical electrodynamics, in fact, the mu are covectors, so they transform. If you make a Lorentz transformation, x goes to x prime equal lambda x, where lambda is a matrix. For a Lorentz boost, for instance. Well, it is known that A must change as A prime equal A times the inverse of lambda. It means that it's transformed as a covector. And which means that, in fact, the A mu are the what is called the component of a connection, of an object called a connection. Namely, there are some one differential forms. So again, it's convenient. Here I have regrouped in a 2x2 matrix all the gauge symmetry indices. So again, you can regroup all the Lorentz indices into a shortened notation by writing that A, now it's just an object that do not contain indices, is just A mu dx mu, where dx mu is a differential form. Okay, so written in this way, this is a degree one differential form whose components are 2x2 Hermitian traceless matrix. So in fact, it's a connection on, a SU2, what's called the fiber bundle over M1 E-1 over the Minkowski space. So that's for the math. But I'm not going to use the most of this differential geometry notation, but it's very useful to do calculation in a convenient way. Okay, so now, as for QED, we have defined, so this is, I expect that I will have to introduce the generalization of the electromagnetic field, so three electromagnetic fields associated to the three currents. And I expect that I have to define covariant derivative. Okay, so covariant derivative means that in order to introduce an interaction, I want to go to the global SU2 symmetry, that is a physical symmetry of the theory, to local SU2 symmetry. Exactly like the Maxwell equation, when you formulate them in terms of a vector potential A, are invariant at the local U1 symmetry that encodes, in fact, the redundancy in the description of the physics by a vector potential. So this is a physical symmetry. There is a current associated to the symmetry. And the local SU2 symmetry will encode the redundancy in the description of the physics by a vector potential. You know, in electromagnetism, the physical objects are the electric field and the magnetic field, but several vector potentials describe the same electric and magnetic field. So they describe the same physical configuration of the electromagnetic field. And the gauge symmetry is a very, very beautiful internal symmetry that encodes and allows to treat all the different ways to parameterize a given EB configuration by a vector field configuration on the same footing. Okay. So we need that also. Okay. So so that as in Maxwell QED theory. Okay. Okay. So Well, then what we have to do is simply exactly what we did in, has been done in QED. I want to define, so I have an operator d mu equal d over dx mu, which is the ordinary derivative. And the problem is that this ordinary derivative, if it acts on the field and I transform the invariance under local gauge symmetry, that instead of considering a transformation, I change my field phi into g, so phi of x into g times phi of x, I want to multiply by gauge transformation that depend on x. Okay, exactly like in electromagnetism, you change your gauge field, for instance, your Dirac field into EI alpha of x times psi of x for the Dirac field in QED. Okay. Okay, so let us define this covariant derivative exactly in the same way. So that's particularly easy for SU2. But so basically, what we have to use is the fact that I define this is the ordinary derivative. I define the covariant derivative. And the covariant derivative, so for my field phi, which is in the fundamental representation of SU2, it will be simply d mu of phi of x will be the ordinary derivative acting on the field phi of x. Remember, phi is a two-component vector. Minus I, my vector field A mu A of x, times TA, my vector TA, my matrix TA applied on phi phi of x. Okay? So I just replace the matrix 1 of QED, where there is just a numerator, by the matrix that tells me in which direction in the Lie algebra I am performing my U1 rotation. Okay? So TA, remember, is a generator. 1/2 of sigma A is a generator the Lie algebra. Okay. And you can rewrite this in a compact notation using the fact that I have this matrix A mu here. I can rewrite this as E mu phi of x minus, of course, and I have sum over A. That's the important point. And therefore, I can rewrite this as minus I A mu of x times phi of x, where this is a 2x2 matrix that contains all the currents, and this is a 2-vector. So I multiply my vector by my 2x2 matrix, and I obtain the correction to the covariant derivative. Okay. And so that's the covariant derivative acting on the fundamental representation of SU2. Now, we have seen here that for a general representation, in fact, we may consider gauge transformation acting on field belonging on a different representation, and therefore, there will be a big matrix. Okay. So what about other representation? Other representation. Well, in general, an element of the group, so let me consider a representation called R. An element of representation is represented by a matrix RG. This is a matrix. And a generator of the representation, so the TA, is represented by a matrix TA. So this will be, in general, a unitary matrix. For SU2, it will be a unitary matrix. And this will be a general traceless antisymmetric matrix, but more general case. OK. And in that case, A mu is still there. It's just a number. So in this case, what it becomes, so we have a representation TA that depends on, that is characteristic of the representation R. So let me write the fact that it's an R here. So this is a matrix that depends on the representation. And therefore, then in this case, so if I have a field phi in this representation R, that will be a vector phi 1 up to phi d, where d is the dimension of the representation. Well, that's the same thing. It will, we just have that the d mu on this phi in this representation r will be the ordinary phi r minus I sum over a of a mu a of x times t a in the representation here phi r of x. Okay, and everything will work the same. Okay. So now, in particular, there is one very important representation, which is called the adjoint representation. Okay. The adjoint representation, in fact, is a representation where the group acts in the Lie algebra, in its Lie algebra. So for SU2, SU2 The dimension of the adjoint is 3. The group acts on a 3-dimensional vector space, and which is the Lie algebra, namely the space of Hermitian traceless matrices, okay, which is precisely the space in which lives this object, the gauge field. Okay. So in fact, A mu of x, A mu lives in the adjoint representation. Okay? And in this representation, what is the TA over R? What is TA in the adjoint representation? So how does the gauge transformation, a symmetry transformation in the direction TA is represented in the adjoint representation? So what is the matrix that acts on some A mu or some any field that belongs in the fundamental representation? Well, it's simply, so remember, TA will be the image in the adjoint representation of a matrix, little TA, that belongs to the adjoint representation because it's a polymatrix. MU belongs to the same vector space. Okay. And, it's elementary groups. It's a very definition of the adjoint representation is that this is the commutator of MU. This is the commutator of TA. Well, if you let me take just a general vector phi whose component is phi mu in the adjoint representation. Phi of adjoint representation. So in the adjoint representation, an element phi in the adjoint representation is just an anti-symmetric matrix A, B, B dagger minus A. And the action of the TA on phi is just the commutator of the 2x2 matrix by a 2x2 matrix. So this is a commutator. Okay, this is both these are 2x2 and 2x2 matrices traceless. Okay. Well, there is an I factor. That's symmetric, but that's okay. So this means that for the adjoint representation, the covariant derivative of d mu of some phi in the adjoint representation is the ordinary derivative of the field in the adjoint representation minus I times the commutator of A mu with phi in the adjoint representation. So remember, this, and this are 2x2 traceless matrices. Okay, so that's an important property, and you have to remember that, in fact, phi is an element, so it's a field that lives in the adjoint representation. Okay. So we have defined, we have introduced an object that I call the vector field. I have introduced a covariant derivative as usual. And now I have to define what are the local gauge transformation that has gauge transformation, which have to be used in my in my formulation of the gauge invariant theory. Okay, so we have seen already now local gauge symmetries for the fundamental representation means that, namely for the field phi and the Dirac field phi, it's just the multiplication by G. So let me remind it for a field in the fundamental representation. Like phi. Phi of x is changed into g of x times phi of x, where g of x belongs to SU2, so it's a 2x2 matrix. And it's in its infinitesimal form, phi of x is changed into phi of x plus I alpha of x times phi of x. Okay? If I write g of x as the matrix 1 plus I alpha of x. Simply, maintenant, this depends on x. Okay, so that's for the fundamental representation. In the adjoint representation, well, again, this is just the definition of the adjoint representation. If I have an element phi that belongs to the adjoint, well, I put here the adjoint on the bottom, and here it was on the top for some reason, but that's... Let us write it adjoint in the bottom to be consistent, because I added a label representing the representation on the top. Again, that's the same. It has to transform as, well, now those are matrices belonging in the same space, well, it's a space with the same dimension, the dimension of the matrix. So these are 2x2 matrix. So that's the definition of the representation. To multiply by the inverse of the matrix on the right and to the matrix itself on the left. So that's the definition of the adjoint representation. And that's how you get that in the infinitesimal representation. And the adjoint field in the infinitesimal representation transform as phi adjoint plus I times the commutator of alpha of x with the field adjoint representation. Which looks like what we had here. Okay. And the same for a general adjoint representation. Okay. And you have seen that for such a vector field, an infinitesimal gauge transformation. This is an infinitesimal. Gauge transformation, which means that this is a 2x2 matrix. And this means that, in fact, what means alpha of x means sum over A from 1 to 3 of some alpha A of x times TA. So in fact, an infinitesimal gauge transformation depends on 3 parameters, where this is just a function, and this is a 2x2 matrix. So you can make an arbitrary local gauge transformation in the 3 different directions in group space. Okay. Okay. Good. And finally, so that's local gauge transformation for fields. Representing the matter of my theory. So the phi here can be either the scalar field or the phi can be either my boson field or my Dirac field that I introduced before. Okay, and finally, what we have to do is to define how under a local gauge transformation, how does the gauge field transform? I have introduced a vector potential. So that's for the matter field. For the vector potential, the gauge field, we don't want this vector potential to transform as a matter field for the same reason that in quantum electrodynamics we want that vector potential, you know, when you perform a local gauge transformation, you change the vector potential to reabsorb this local gauge transformation. And remember, mu belongs to the adjoint representation. It's a 2x2 traceless matrix. So we want that under a local transformation, mu, well, naively, if it was an ordinary matter field as the other one, it would transform as g of x to the right and g to the left and g minus x to the right. Okay, but we had to add a new term, which is simply the matrix g of x to the right and the derivative, ordinary derivative of the inverse of the matrix G to the left. Okay, so and that's the term that is present in electrodynamics. So that's as in QED and the Maxwell theory. Simply, I'm applying the rules of building a gauge theory or QED simply in the three different directions of my spacetime. Okay? And now, if you assume that G is infinitesimal, what does it give? It gives A mu of X into A mu of x plus, okay, so here there will be a d mu alpha of x, as usual. So that's the term we have in electrodynamics, so as in QED. Okay. Simply now, this is, remember, this is a 3x3 matrix. It's a 2x2 matrix, so it corresponds to matrix. But then we have a new term, which comes out that now mu is a matrix, 2x2 matrix. G or alpha is a 2x2 matrix. So they do not necessarily commute. While in quantum electrodynamics, we have only a U1, you have one generator, so mu is a number, and G is a pure phase. It's EI alpha. So they commute. So we have a new term that comes just from the fact that we are dealing with matrices that do not necessarily commute. And we find that this is A mu of X, the commutator of A mu of X with alpha of X. And this is new. And not only this is new, so that's very important. That's the most important formula you need to know about non-Abelian gauge theory is that the, by just repeating what the strategy that has been done in Maxwell theory, we have, up to now, everything we have not been doing anything that's the strategy to derive the gauge invariance in Maxwell's theory, except that we have three currents instead of one, and they do not commute. And we end up with a different definition for the gauge transformation acting on the vector potential that contains the new term, that contains the fact that the vector do not commute. Okay. And, well, we can just one final remark. Of course, this d mu alpha minus a commutator of a mu with alpha of x is just the definition for the covariant derivative in the adjoint representation. So you can rewrite this as a mu dot a mu plus the covariant derivative of alpha. I'm writing it without the x's. We hear the covariant derivative in the adjoint representation. Okay. And this covariant derivative, remember, depends on a mu. So the transformation, when you perform a local gauge transformation generated by a generator alpha, the transformation is just a shift, but it's a shift. It's a linear transformation on a mu. So it's something more complicated. It's just not a translation. It's a translation plus a linear transformation. OK, so this depends on a mu itself. So the gauge transformation acts differently on different points in space-time, for instance, for a mu, which makes things more subtle and more interesting. Okay. Well, we are almost done because now I hope one sees something here. Ah, okay. Well, that's important is to have the compact form. Okay. So now we are almost done. And we have 20 minutes left, that's fine. Because we can write the what's called the field strength, F mu nu, which will be the analog of the field strength, namely the electromagnetic tensor in Maxwell theory or QED. By writing that we now have a tensor F nu nu, which is just I times the commutator of two covariant derivatives. Remember, the covariant derivative is an operation that acts on the vector field and which depends on the position. So when you take, so it depends on a mu. So when you take two derivatives, you get an object. So this will be an object that will be, so it has, it's an, F mu nu is an antisymmetric Lorentz tensor of rank 2, Dame matrix, as mu nu. But each d mu, in fact, written like that, is a 2x2 matrix. So we have both a commutator of derivative operator acting on some functions and matrix. So if you compute this, what you get is you get the ordinary derivative acting d mu acting on the field a nu minus the derivative in the direction nu of acting on the field a mu. That's as in Maxwell. And a new term, which comes out from the fact that they do not make derivative, the commutator of a mu and a nu. And this is new. And remember, this is an antisymmetric tensor of rank 2 with respect to the Lorentz indices. And this is also a 2x2 matrix because it belongs to the Lie algebra of SU2, or it lives or in the adjoint representation. Okay, so this is a 2x2 matrix. This is a 2x2 matrix, and this is a commutator of 2x2 matrices. Okay, and as usual, so this antisymmetric Lorentz tensor and traceless symmetric 2x2 matrix has the advantage, as in QED, that it transforms covariantly under a local gauge transformation. Because this term here, it was hidden, but the d mu alpha contains a I times commutator of a mu with alpha, the generator, and the covariant derivative contains a minus I, the generator, so they cancel, which means that, in fact, if I perform a local gauge transformation, which was written here, where was it written? Can you see it? Unfortunately, it's not written, so that's important. Let me rewrite it. So if I perform a local transformation A mu into A mu plus D mu alpha equal A mu plus the ordinary derivative of alpha minus A mu alpha, or if you prefer A mu into, and you can rewrite this, in fact, if you can check, as G times A mu plus I D mu applies to G minus 1. This is a global and an infinitesimal gauge transformation. Remember, 2x2 matrix, 2x2 matrix, 2x2 matrices. Then F mu nu transform as G F mu nu G minus 1, or if you prefer, in the infinitesimal version, F mu nu transform into F mu nu minus I, the commutator of F mu nu with a matrix alpha. Remember, alpha is a 2x2 matrix, 2x2 matrix, 2x2 matrix, etc. So it transforms covariantly as QED. Simply in QED, this was simple because this was just phases. So this, for instance, this was the most trivial. Yes?
I don't understand how you got the two first terms on the definition of the freeze terms, right?
Yes, you do not understand?
How we got the two first terms, partial nu, a nu, minus partial nu, a nu.
Well, this is an operation acting on function on 2x2 matrix depending on x. So you can just, this is just, d nu minus d mu with this definition of the covariant derivative. The covariant derivative is the ordinary derivative minus I times the commutator of a mu with my function. So d mu of something is this. So now if you compute d mu, d nu acting on something, what you find is that you get d mu minus I, d mu acting on the covariant derivative d nu of something minus I, the commutator of a mu with the covariant derivative d nu of something. And here you get d nu of something minus I times d mu of the covariant derivatives of the commutator of a mu, so a mu times something minus something times a mu, a nu. Okay, and then you get minus I times, so I get a mu times d nu of something minus, so that's for the first term, minus a mu a nu times a mu minus, but that's a, I'm sorry, a mu or m, well, I'm sorry, I'm a bit confused. Here it's not a commutator anymore. So, okay, so that's d mu of, I thought this was a commutator. That's d mu acting on that. So you find that this is okay, I'm sorry. I started the calculation and now I am confused. Ah, okay, I am computing this and this, so okay. So this is the commutator of A. I'm still computing this term. Yes, so I'm computing d mu of A nu times something. So this is the first term. And then I'm computing minus I times mu acting on d nu minus I times A nu commuting at this. Plus I times the commutator d nu, so d nu acting on a mu minus I and I, there is a, I'm going to get confused in the sign, but you, I am going to have an some commutator of a nu and a mu, something like that. And you go on, you do the calculation. I feel that I will make an odd number of sign mistakes if I factors. But finally, at the end, you find that the d nu disappear, as it should. But you still have some d mu acting on some a mu, not on two. And you get this commutator of two a mu. Okay, so this field strength that is now a 2x2 matrix, so it contains many components, it transforms covariantly, as in QED, but in QED, The fact that it transforms covalently is quite easy to see because here it's just a matrix and this is a number. So this is a phase, E I alpha, and this is E minus I alpha. So it's you can, everything commutes, so that's quite easy to see. Here it's much less obvious because G, F, and G minus 1 do not commute necessarily. And they indeed do not commute because F mu nu. And so in fact, that's not as in QED. This has to be one has to be more careful. Okay, so finally, and if you want to compute it explicitly, because that's a quite a compact formula, but if you want to write it, this F mu nu in terms of the element of the algebra, remember, A mu means sum over A from 1 to 3 of A mu A TA, where TA as a generator of SU2, the three generator of SU2, okay? And that are formulated in terms of the Pauli matrices. And remember that this SU2 group is not commutative. The generator do not commute, but the commutator of two TAs can be written, where it's just my notation. The commutator of two TAs is just given by expressively in terms of some other TC, and so this is minus with my notation I times F A B C, where the number F A B C are called the structure constant of the Lie algebra. Okay, so that tensor, and for SU2, the structure tensor F A B C is just a Ricci symbol epsilon A B C, so it's 0, 1, minus 1, or 0, depending on the... So it's if this is a permutation of 1, 2, 3, that's the signature of the permutation. And if it's not a permutation, it's 0. Okay? So, and if you apply this to this notation, what this means is that FABC... Yeah. So remember, F, this field strength, is an element of the algebra. So in fact, it contains three components. You can write F mu nu as sum from A equal 1 to 3 of F mu nu A TA. Okay, and that's basically the same kind of decomposition I wrote here. So F mu nu will be F mu nu 3. So you can write that F mu nu is a matrix of the form F mu nu 3, F mu nu 1 minus I, F mu nu 2, F mu nu 1, plus I F mu mu 2 and minus F mu mu 3. Okay? So this means that the big object F mu nu contains the three field strengths. So in fact, there are three field strengths. There are three field strengths. F mu nu A associated to each current Jimmy Wu is the generator of the transformation. And each field strength F mu nu A writes as the ordinary derivative of d mu A nu A minus d nu A mu A. It's associated to each current and to each A mu A. Remember, we had three vector fields, so three different kinds of photons, if you want, of electromagnetic field. And you get this term that comes from this ordinary term here, plus a commutator, which is plus F A B C A mu B A nu C with a sum over indices, sum over B and sum over C, sum over the B's and C's indices understood. See, so contrary to the QED, the field strengths depend in a nonlinear way on the A mu. Not as in QED. New. But that comes out just from the symmetry. I hope you are able to read it if you are below. So, okay, if you forget about that, that's important things to understand. Okay? Okay, and now we are done. Because with all this math, it has been quite a bit abstract, but I just introduced a basic object. You have just to keep in mind that we have been doing exactly the strategy that is obtained to derive the Maxwell theory out of just assuming that there is a local gauge invariance that introduces an interaction between the current generated by electron and positron moving out of propagating with gauge fields that are given by the photon. So that's exactly what we did, but simply assuming that the currents have a more complicated structure. But we want to have the symmetry. And I'm going to explain why we need this symmetry. But now, at the end, let me just say that. Now we are done, because we can write a generator, an action for this gauge field. That is the generalization of the, so I can write an action, which is simply minus the integral over d4x. I can take the products of f mu nu and 2 f mu nu, exactly like in Maxwell's theory, except that now you have to remember that these are 2 by 2 matrices. These are 2 by 2 matrices. So this is, if I take the product, I want to have something, I take the trace, because these are 2 by 2 matrices. Okay? And, well, there is a G that will be the analog of some charge. So I am a coupling constant. But basically, this action is the analog of a Maxwell equation, S Maxwell, where here F was just a 1 by 1 matrix. It was just a 1 by 1 matrix, and this was basically the charge of the electron. And this action is gauge invariant. If you make a local gauge transformation, remember, this is a transformation by a G of X. This is gauge invariant. And for the coupling, the matter fields, replace the d mu by the covariant derivative as was done in the Maxwell theory. The covariant derivative, remember, are written somewhere here. And for instance, for the fundamental representation, it involves the usual coupling, A mu times the matter phi. Okay, so as in Maxwell. Okay, and tomorrow we are going to discuss in more detail what is this action that I've wrote very schematically, what is this and what it means in terms of interactions between the gauge field, namely the vector particles, and the matter. And what means the fact that this F mu nu now contains this new term that is not present in the Maxwell theory, because the Maxwell theory contains just the structure constant of the U1 group, which is zero. Okay, thank you.